The podcast you're about to listen to is part of the Professional Casual Network. To find more podcasts like this, please check out professionalcasual.com.
The Professional Casual Network has gear. Check out teespring.com/store/professionalcasual for fresh new swag. A huge shout out to our sponsor, BeardedDragonGames.online. Pick up all your local game store goodness from Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, or WFURP 4th Edition, as well as terrain, paints, board games, comics, and more. Make sure to use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout for free domestic shipping or PCME10 for 10% off your total order at bearddragongames.online. Also, a special thanks to Built Bar for sponsoring the show. To get 10% off your order and to help support the show, use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout or use the link in the show notes.
Old World fans, the Professional Casual Network is starting a slow grow campaign in February 2024. The best part is, you can participate no matter where you are in the world. All you have to do is join our Discord and track your army's progress in the slow grow channels. We're starting February at 500 points and adding 250 points every month until we reach 2,000 points in August. Started late? Not a problem. Come join us in Discord to track your progress, get hobby tips, and help keep us all accountable throughout this campaign. Come grow with us in the old world. Hey, my electric casuals, and welcome to another episode of Beards, Ears, and Skulls. The best old world podcast on the internet. I'm Taylor, your personal crudge bearer. Grudge bearer? What's a crudge?
Crudge.
Crudge seems like something that you need to scrape off of your car after winter.
What's a crudge with you?
What's a crudge with you? These are two of my favorite people here. We've got Dan and Tim.
Hey.
Hi. So today on Best, we're going to be continuing with the High Elves, which are, as everyone knows, one of the worst armies in old world. So just wanted to, you know, get the disclaimer out there and just let everybody know what's going on. But before we get started, I want to send a huge dowie thank you to our beautiful and wonderful patrons who support us over on patreon.com/professionalcasual. These folks help us do what we do every single day, keep the lights on, and keep Tim from eating his blown tires.
To be fair, though, they look like gummies. And like, I'm not a fan of licorice, but like, if you get enough mud on there from ruining your parents' lawn, like, it kind of looks like chocolate.
Here's the good news. You just have somebody else change your tire for you when it blows on the highway.
That's absolutely accurate. I'll eat hot dogs.
I passed by a gas station today, and it had a Big Gulp and a hot dog for $2.50. Yo. And I was like, that's way cheaper than like going to the hospital to fix my constipation. So...
How many Big Gulps and hot dogs did you get?
I got zero because it was right after a pierogi party.
Okay, fair. Pierogies are dope.
Pierogies, kielbasa, and cabbage soup. It was amazing.
I love pierogies.
I have heard of pierogies.
Oh, they're filled with mashed potatoes, so mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's yucky. Ugh,
and cheese.
I like cheese. That part's all right.
This guy. Sometimes cheese, yeah.
No, cheese is always all right.
I mean, yes, that's true. I'm just saying pierogies don't have to have cheese in them to be pierogies, but they are better that way.
They are better, yes. Everybody's so huge shout out to our big subbies. We've got X-Paxis, Rob, Dagnus, Cider Drinker, Tony Hot Hands, Otis, Leroy, Iron Maze, Wizard Skills, Bicon, Briar Mage, Tau, Cliff Jumper, and James. And then we also have some electric casuals in there. We've got some Tony M, Jonathan B, Meerkat, Stefan, Rev, Right Mad, Cliff, and Pagan Prince. So thanks, everybody. Of your stuff. If you want to head over to Patreon, sign up for that electric casuals tier just to show us how much you love the old worlds. patreon.com/professionalcasual. Now, Dan.
Huh?
I would like to hear the voicemail that Tim has on his phone.
Oh, yeah. Hit it, Tim.
Okay, so this was not for Elite Eight Showdown. This was actually for Beards, Ears, and Skulls.
That's us.
That's a follow-up on my comment and complaint from the old world. From the other day. So, even when you guys talk about them in Beards, Ears, and Skulls, you call them dwarves. Not dwarfs. It's dwarves. Yet the book says dwarfs, which is not a word. Editorially speaking, I'm not a big fan. Have a great day. This has been X-Paxus. I'll see you guys at Adepticon in 2 days. Bye.
Thanks, X-Paxus. It was great to see you at Adepticon.
It was.
More than 2 days ago.
Oh, I love that guy.
I wouldn't even call it a tirade, because it's X-Paxus, so he does it all very politely, talking about how dwarfs is not a word. It should be dwarves.
Isn't it the same as wolves?
Well, we're talking about, it's a very conscious decision GW made a long time ago to call them dwarfs with an F, not
Wait,
dwarves.
That's real. That's not like a semantics thing. That's like they actually refer to them as dwarfs.
Yes. So like even in the Forces of Fantasy book, it's the Dwarven Mountain Holds, not Dwarven with a V, Mountain Holds.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's G-Dub's doing G-Dub things.
I forget the exact reason why. I think I believe it was to try to differentiate them from Tolkien dwarves.
Yeah. That seems to be the general consensus on the internet.
But yeah, it's just like technically it's wrong, but it's just the fantasy name they use, so it's fine.
Can you dig it?
Yes, we can.
Are there high dwarves?
Oh, okay.
There's chaos dwarves we'll talk about in another episode.
High elves to elves as chaos dwarves are to dwarves? Dwarves, sorry.
So I would call chaos dwarves like the dark dwarves. More like
dark elves, yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So like regular dwarves are the closest to akin to high elves on that scale and only that scale.
So super quick history of the three kinds of elves. In the Warhammer world, they're all one species. They're all elves. They're not like physiologically different from each other. They used to all be one nation. They were from the island. It wasn't an island back then. It was part of the continent that is now Naggaroth. Now it's an island of Uthwan, and they had tried to colonize a bunch of the world. So they had colonies all over the place. And then the elves had a huge schism, a giant war about like who should be the Phoenix King and everything. And the war was so big, it broke the piece of the continent off to become an island. Mm. And it's sinking. So there's a bunch of elves that have given their lives to be casting this spell forever to keep the island afloat. And if any of them stop, the whole thing would sink in a matter of probably days, maybe a bit longer than that. So those that stayed in Naggarond are the dark, we'd call the dark elves. They call themselves the Drukhai.
Okay.
High elves call themselves the Aesir. They were all of the Aesir. And then
the best elves.
So then there were just dark elves and high elves, right? At this point. And then there was the War of the Beard. I definitely thought Taylor was going to jump in there. I paused a second for him.
No, I don't have to say anything to that. Anyways.
Can I interrupt very briefly?
It was called the War of Vengeance.
One is going to seem like I'm being stupid,
okay,
but I'm not. It's a very real question based off our previous conversation. The second one is a statement that, yes, is probably intended to make people upset. But the first question...
Okay, legitimate question, question mark.
And do they call them elves?
Who?
The elves.
As opposed elves, no.
So they did it for dwarves, but not elves.
Correct. I believe they're just called elves with a V.
Correct. That is V-E-S, yep.
Yeah.
Second,
I don't know why they don't call them elves.
The elves splitting from one initial race through war and literally fragmentations of the geography as a whole sounds like they stole that from World of Warcraft.
So when the War of the Beard happened, which is the war that made elves and dwarves not like dwarfs, not like each other.
From the Council of Three Hammers and Iron Forge. Yes.
I'm just going to keep ignoring it best I can. A lot of the elves fled from the old world. Like they realized we've lost this area to the dwarves. We're just going to leave. But those that stayed behind over time became the wood elves, and they call themselves the Azrai.
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 So they left the old world.
Yeah.
And went to Aegis Sigmar.
Yep. Yep.
I'm done. That's it for this episode. Don't worry about it. I won't do any more.
The old world is just the part of the Warhammer world that's like our Europe.
Yeah.
Like the Empire, Bretonnia, Kislev, the Border Princes, those kind of, that is the old world.
So elves were a big part of that particular geographical area?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
They had colonized a bunch of that land. They didn't go that far into what is the Empire now because there were too many Beastmen and Orc and Goblin tribes and they were like, this isn't worth it. But then when they like retreated back to Uthman, those that stayed behind kind of holed up in the forests and became the Wood Elves. Which is actually kind of cool. But like, yeah, they're all the same. They think of themselves differently because this is thousands of years ago. Yeah. All these things happened, especially the schism. That was a lot of thousands of years ago. So like over time, they've culturally, they're completely different.
Okay.
So not to like refer to this to any other types of fiction again, but the old world is essentially Middle Earth.
Kind of.
Okay.
Right. And then the elves came over from somewhere else and then are slowly going back.
A lot of them left. Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
But obviously we'll talk more about wood elves and dark elves in later episodes. We've got a decent amount of experience with both those armies between me and Taylor.
I played a lot of dark elves in Warhammer Online.
That'll give you some ideas.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Because my brother's second army after dwarves was, of course, dark elves. So I fought against them a lot.
Yeah, you just had the whole elf trifecta because you had woodies for a while too, and I purchased them for you, right? From you?
Timmy, from my brother.
Oh, I got those from Timmy.
He had wood elves. I may have played them a couple times, but they weren't my models. I actually found one in a Bits box earlier today, a Glade Guard model just without a head. And I was like, maybe I'll give this to Taylor.
Dude, I'd paint the heck out of it for sure.
You got to find a head, I guess.
And do I? It's going to be a dead wood elf. Anyways, so we are going to be starting up chit-chatting about some more elves today, but speaking of elves, we're going to do one little more like a side note here. Dan actually got to use his elves recently in a game
against
one of our absolute favorite people, Andy G.
Yeah.
Who's a local, just an incredible human being. Tell us how that went, man.
It was awesome. We played 2,000 points, and like we actually almost played an entire game, which I feel like often when we play a game like in the evening, it's like, oh, we kind of ran out of time. The store's closing or this person has to go. Ours was basically done, but I did get to try out Prince on a Dragon.
Heck yeah.
Because I've been hearing so many boogeyman stories about how dragons specifically, basically ridden monsters, but really dragons in particular, between the different elves and chaos and things that can take it, Tomb Kings with their bone dragon and Vampire Counts with their zombie dragon. People hate dragons right now. Apparently they're real nasty. So I wanted to try it out, and I was like, if anybody can take it, it's Andy. Like, he's been playing the game since second edition, he told me. He's even had stuff in White Dwarf in the past, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So I tried out a prince on a moon dragon, which is the looking at dragons, like a lot of other big monsters, you can only take them as a mount, and they can only be taken by princes and archmages. Nobles might be able to take them. And of course, a dragon mage, which is just a fire wizard on a sun dragon. So there are three different types of dragons that are basically, as they get older, they get more powerful.
Okay.
Then old, like, dragons never stop growing, kind of like orcs. They just keep growing,
or lobsters.
True, that too. Until either they're slain, or most of them go into a deep sleep for like millennia,
like a torpor almost.
More like really, really long hibernation. Topor is a short term hibernation.
Oh,
like chipmunks and squirrels do.
Oh,
yeah, Tim. Okay. Actually, if you think about a dragon, kind of like a world soul from World of Warcraft.
I'm gonna mute both of you. I'm gonna figure out how to do this.
Here's the good news: we're on the same line right now. You can't mute me without muting yourself.
So if I were editing this show, I would just be searching for the word Warcraft and just cutting that out every time. But yeah, so when you're taking dragons, you got a choice of three, unless it's a dragon mage and they only get the sun dragon. So
now,
sun
dragons, like in Warcraft as a whole, like, oh, sorry, that was an actual slip. In Warhammer as a whole, there's moon, sun, and
star.
I thought you're gonna get it. Yes.
And that's it. Like, for those,
the,
are the
for, the, not for just the high elves.
Oh, okay. No, so there are other dragons.
There is a yes. Forest dragon for the wood elves. There is a chaos dragon for the chaos people. Chaos dragon's dope because it has like multiple heads and mutations and stuff.
I think dark elves is just called a dark dragon or black dragon.
Black dragon. Yeah, that makes sense. And then orcs have a little bit different. Theirs is an actual wyvern.
Yeah,
so it's like a little tiny dragon.
It's a little bit. It's like a smaller dragon.
Like a proto Drake, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that another Warcraft?
From Warcraft.
Term? Doesn't matter. You already said yes.
All right. So, yes, there are three different types of dragons you can take. And the sun dragons are the youngest, they're the cheapest, they're the weakest. Moon dragons are in the middle. And then star dragons are the big nasties.
Oh, okay.
And it ranges from 180 points for a sun dragon, which is pretty standard for a ridden monster. It's pretty good. Moon dragons are 235. It's paying 55 points more.
Hmm.
But you get plus one weapon skill, plus one strength, plus one wound, minus one initiative, because as they get older, they get slower, but plus one attack. So absolutely worth it. And then the big daddy of them all, the star dragon, is 290 points.
Okay.
On top of your expensive prince, probably. But they get a further plus one weapon skill for weapon skill 7. The strength 7. They give your elf plus 3 toughness, so he's toughness 6, plus 6 wounds, so you have 9 wounds on your prince.
Mm.
Initiative's only 2, but again, that's fine, and 6 attacks. And as they get, Sun Dragon starts with D6 stomp attacks. As you move up to Moon Dragon, then Star Dragon, Moon Dragon also has D6, but a Star Dragon is D6 plus 1. And of course, because it's just an auto hit at their strength, the stomp gets better as well. A sun dragon starts at strength 5. So you get D6 strength 5 stomps. Not bad at any means.
It doesn't sound it, no.
They are behemoths, so it's also minus 2 armor unless it's against another behemoth.
And they also have full plate, which is dope because that's an auto 4 up armor.
Yeah.
I just noticed this, that sun dragons actually have impetuous. I didn't realize that before. So it seems like sun dragons are a little bit younger. They're harder to like rein in.
Yes.
So there's a chance that they could just like, I see something over there. I'm going to go eat it.
Yep.
You have to be like, no, you know,
not until you have enough gym badges.
Why? Right. Exactly. It's
one reason why the dragon mage is not a favored unit at the moment, because you can only put the dragon mage on a sun dragon. You don't get a choice. So you're, Wizard is now impetuous,
right? Which is rough.
I mean, if you play around it, it's not that bad, because I believe, let me double check, I'm pretty sure you can give them
dragon mages are impetuous
because they're riding a sun dragon. Yeah.
Oh, you have to take them with a sun dragon.
That's how they come with a sun dragon. You pay for it right in their points.
That makes a lot of sense. Hence, it's in the name.
So, luckily, you can give them battle magic, so you've got a decent selection of assailment spells.
Yeah. Okay.
So like you can, you know, you're impetuous. Maybe you roll a 1 through 3, they have to charge. So you charge into something. You got a dragon with you, so that's not the end of the world. And you might you got a good chance of having a hammer hand to cast as well and do some more hits.
What's a hammer hand?
So hammer hand is the signature spell of battle magic. It's an assailment, so you have to be in combat to cast it, and it's like 2d6 strength 4 hits or something. I'm almost there. 2d3 strength 4 hits, AP 2.
Which is dope. Which, and it's only nice. Casting a 7. So, yeah. I mean, you're going to make it a level 2 wizard. You only need to roll a 5 on 2d6. So
hey, there's really no reason not to make him a level 2. It's already 275 points. Those extra 30 points are absolutely worth it when you're putting mages on the table. 100%. Yep. So when I played against Andy, also the the dragons all have a breath attack. This time they're all the same. It's just a breath weapon, strength 4, AP 1.
Okay.
Which I found I'd never even used it in our game, because it's a shooting attack. You cannot march and breathe fire, which I don't think used to be the case. Also, you used to be able to use it in combat and just do 2d6 hits on the unit. You cannot shoot it in combat anymore. So it doesn't have like the flamethrower rule where you like move it away from the model. It's just you put the flame template with the narrow end touching the front arc of the model, and then whatever is under the template, you know, is hit or hit on a 4+ if they're partially covered. So like, it's not going to happen very often. But again, the dragon's about combat, right? It's about getting this thing into combat and just doing a ton of wounds on the charge.
Yeah, having to eat some dudes because it's impetuous.
Yes. So I had a prince with a lance. Shield. I didn't pay for any other armor because I gave him the Blood of Kalidor armor, which gives him the dragon armor rule. And he comes with full plate as part of what you pay for that honor. Dragon armor just gives him a 6+ ward save in this case. And then he had the bedazzling helm, so he was harder to hit, and a seed of rebirth. So he had a ward save. So he had like a two, I think he just had a two up and a five up regen.
Heck yeah. So I'm looking up breath weapon. It's very interesting because it says a model with a breath weapon can use it once per round during the shooting phase of its turn.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually say it's like a shooting attack. So I wonder if you can march and use it.
It might. I'll try to look it up. I think it might be in the FAQ.
That gotcha. Says,
no,
okay.
You cannot use it while marching.
It would make sense because you're like focusing so much on your movement. But interesting. Yeah, I haven't looked up looked that up yet. So, anyways,
luckily it was easy to find. I just Googled old world FAQ and it actually went right to the right site. Wow. So, but yeah, so I had this prince on the dragon was awesome. The first turn, I think I went first. I actually passed all of my impetuous tests, but I think I charged with them every turn that I could. At a big old block of black orcs with a unit of silver helms at the same time.
Heck yeah.
And he fled.
Oh.
And I went, what? Very much not expecting that. And so they made it like basically an impossible charge for both of them, even with movement 8 or fly 10 and swift stride. So the dragon failed his charge and my silver helm was redirected into a giant. And that didn't go well for them at all. But
you kind of got bait and switched a little bit.
Yeah,
that's dope.
I thought it was going to work against the giant, and it did not at all. I did one wound against the giant with a horse.
So, what does the impetuous actually do? Like, what's the save, and then what happens if you fail it? I assume everything just goes as normal if you pass.
Yes. So, if you are able to declare a charge, like if it's possible, mm-hmm. you have to roll a one. You have to roll a d6. On a 1 through 3, you have to declare the charge. 4, 5, 6, you can do what you want as normal.
Okay.
But there's no benefit to it.
I gotcha. So, like, so if you're going to charge anyway with it, like you're fine, but you're missing out on a phase potentially?
Yeah, so if you wanted to just move instead of charging something, and you're impetuous, there's a chance where you're just like, no, I'm going to go kill them.
Yeah, full tilt. I got it.
Yep.
Right. So it's the new animosity for orcs and goblins. Pretty much the entire orcs and goblins reign has impetuous.
Right? Real quick, found it. It is in the official FAQ, which I think you can find pretty easily if you just go to oldwarhammercommunity.com/theoldworlddownloads. It's right there. It says, can a model use a breath weapon after marching? No, a model cannot shoot during the shooting phase if it marched during the preceding movement phase. And although they work differently to most missile weapons, breath weapons are a type of missile weapon.
There we go.
So,
okay.
Thanks for the clarification.
Yep. Definite word on that. But so the next turn of the game, my dragon, just waited and then charged the black orcs again after they rallied. He was too close to the table edge to risk fleeing again. So made the charge. Smash in with my high elf prince with 4 attacks, you know, with a lance, so he's strength 5, 6, and then the dragon was a moon dragon, so I had 5 more attacks, weapon skill 6, strength 6, AP 2, and just like decimated the front line of the black orcs. I think he had the champion and 1 or 2 models left because he had them like 7 or 8 wide. It was a big unit, and then they didn't do any damage back, and then broke from combat and fled off the table.
Mm-hmm. Woof.
They fell back in good order, but he was too close from fleeing the turn before from the charge. He went a little further than he was hoping, and then the rest of the unit fled off the table, and my dragon turned around and went, what's next? Which happened to be a big old unit of night goblins.
What does what's next do?
He was still hungry.
Oh.
So the dragon, like, was my army. So, like, I get why people are scared of these things. The rest of my army was not good. Just in general, did not perform well. My cavalry kept getting countercharged by orc boar boys.
Oh yeah, let's go.
Awesome. At one point I just got royally messed up by fanatics because of course.
Yo, fanatics in this game are real good.
They're disgusting. I can't wait to talk about orcs and goblins.
Oh my gosh, dude.
There's so much stuff. Especially with the new Arcane Journal that just came out.
Will Andy be on for Orcs and Goblins?
I would love to have Andy on for Orcs and
Goblins. I know Matt Alex also wants to be on for Orcs and Goblins.
I mean, we're going to have seven Orcs and Goblins episodes.
Yeah.
So.
Right? Just like we have a bunch of friends of the network that are really into Bretonians. We have a lot of people, friends of the network and within the network, that are really into Orcs and Goblins as well. But yeah, so I had my so I played pretty much all cavalry lists. I've been trying to really try that out because it hasn't been viable for so long. With the prince, I had an archmage level 4 just on foot. He hung out with a unit of 20 swordmasters. Then I had 2 units of 8 silver helms, the full command, 5 reavers just to be annoying, but I forgot to give them the stuff that makes them good. I forgot now I have to, I wanted them to skirmish, but you got to pay for that. I didn't give them scouts. And I think when I was just building my list in Old World Builder, I just forgot to give them short bows. Because in the past, that was such an auto-include. You give them spears and short bows. So they were just a unit of bad charging cavalry, unfortunately. I think they fled from a charge at one point and then never recovered. I had 5 dragon princes, as always. I got to get my other 5 built so I can take a big old block. They did all right. They charged a big unit of big guns and killed a whole bunch before they got killed back and then ran away. A unit of 2 chariots that didn't do anything, and a lion chariot that actually literally didn't do anything. First turn of the game, Andy did have the first turn, I'm remembering now, and his Doom Diver landed on top of my lion chariot and just killed it outright. Because Doom Divers under the hole do D3 plus 1 damage.
Yeah, Doom Divers are dope.
Because they're a stone thrower now.
Tim, you grease up, so goblins grease up a plank of wood.
Yes, consider me already sold, but please keep going.
Right? They they take a huge rubber band, and they pull it all the way back, right? And then they put a goblin on it with, like, paper mache wings.
And a big and spiky helmet.
And a big spiky helmet. Yep. And then they just flank, and this goblin goes, goes flying through the air and uses its wings to, like, dive down onto a target. It's awesome.
I love that.
So
good. I love that.
They've always been good. And they still can redirect a little bit. If they scatter too high, they can redirect like D3 inches back.
It's so fun.
I think he rolled either a crazy high miss or a direct hit every roll. And it was devastating.
Yeah, it sounds like a stone thrower.
I mean, it got its point back in the first shot when it just one shot in my white lion chair.
Oh, yeah.
But I was like, oh, I was going to have that charge in tandem with the swordmasters, though. And he was like, not anymore. but the rest of my army did not great. I had the swordmasters, the archmage, and the dragon left at the end was it. And I killed a fair amount, but he had a huge unit of boar boys with a black orc war boss in it. That was awesome. He was disgusting. And a couple of things like the Doom Diver. No, the Doom Diver destroyed itself at one point, but it definitely got its points back. A couple smattering of like a wolf chariot and things like that left. A lot of things died, but like most of what did the work was the prince on a moon dragon.
All right, so bring some cannons next time I face you with that thing.
Yeah,
well, that's kind of what you would set it up to do, right? Like if you sunk that many points in it, like that's obviously going to be like your efficacy.
Yeah. So for a 2,000 point game, the prince on a moon dragon was 466 points.
Yeah.
Because I took 80 points of magic items and a 15 point elven honor. But again, 2+, 5+ regen, tough nut to crack. It is toughness 6 is pretty good. For a fighting character, it's good. Not as tough as like a chaos lord on a chaos dragon, but that's because elves, you know, only toughness 3 to start. But toughness 6 is still good. He was really, really hard to hurt. At the end of the game, we were kind of rushing a little bit because he was like, oh, my God, he's come pick me up soon. And then it was like, normally I wouldn't really do it this way, but because we're almost done and we're just having a fun game, like if this was a tournament, I wouldn't do this move, but I'm going to do this so we can have a face off. So I got to charge my dragon into the boar boys so we could challenge our generals together.
Nice.
Heels is better.
Yeah.
I mean, my dice completely betrayed me that game. And he was like, my war boss should be dead, but he's not. So I'm going to hit you back now kind of thing. And it was awesome. So the dragon survived, did take a couple of wounds, but it did all the work of my army practically.
It's kind of a cool moment. I like that.
It was pretty great.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, that's not the only monster they have.
No, there's a ton of them. And before we get into them, we skipped over a couple infantry. So your Shadow Warriors, those are your like stalky boys. You know, they have their Yep, scouts, skirmish, all that sort of stuff. They're really interesting because they're warriors in Aggarith, so they are, excuse me, they're kind of like this, what, I can't let dark elves anywhere near my island sort of thing?
So they're from the province of Naggarith, which was the part where the now island was connected to the continent.
Yeah.
Right? Which is Naggarith.
Gotcha.
Not to be confused with the city of Naggarond.
Naggarond, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So
I figured Naggarith. Naggarith and Naggaleth.
Yeah. So Naggarith is one of the high elven provinces on the island of Uthwan. So those there are like have their families very closely connected to the rest of the Dark Elves because that was
right on the edge.
The region.
Right on the okay.
Where they lived, right? So they really super extra hate the Dark Elves because they're also always the first point of like invasion entry into Uthwan because it's the closest place to Naggarith. So yeah, they hate Dark Elves more than anybody else.
But their lineage is the closest to it?
Yes.
Okay.
Which I actually really like about
I kind of
the Shadow
that.
Warriors. But they're cool. They're your kind of standard, you know, skirmish unit.
Stealthy skirmish boys.
Yeah.
Or girls. And then the Sisters of Avalorn, which I don't know anything about them at all. They're the newest unit from 8th edition, I believe, right?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, technically they're not very new anymore, like 15 years. Yeah. But to me, they're still super new. They didn't have models. Also, the Handmaiden of the Everqueen was a new character unit, or maybe back blast from the past. So I don't know a lot about them either. I know they, so they're Sisters of Avalorn. So Avalorn is a forest on Uthwan, which is where the Everqueen lives. Super powerful mage. When one dies, like another one takes over like immediately. The current one in Old World, I think is the same one that was in previous editions of Warhammer, is Alariel.
I think she was she was just appointed because the Everqueen was just assassinated.
Something like that. She dies all the time, but there's always another one immediately, right? So the Sisters of Avalorn are her like personal bodyguards.
Okay.
And they are like highly trained warriors. They are archers extraordinaire and have the bows of Avalorn. So they have super duper awesome bows. So kind of like how we had the specialized melee units that all had their unique weapons. The Sisters of Avalorn are like the specialized missile unit. They have their own weapon in the bows of Avalorn, which are
also
have 30.
Yeah. They also have the arrows of Aisha. So a little bit extra, right?
Yeah, so they have that as well. So the Bow of Avalorn doesn't seem like anything special. Range 30, it's their strength of 3, armor being 1, magical attacks, volley fire. So same thing as a longbow, but magical attacks. But then you throw in the Arrows of Aisha special rule.
And it's a special rule for the bows, or like an additional like item you have to take to be a part of it?
It's just a special rule a unit can have. So like the Handmaiden of the Everqueen also has this rule.
Okay.
But it's any bow carried by a model with a special rule has the armor bane 1 and AP 1.
Hmm.
So with the bow of Avalorn.
Their armor bane 2, right?
Right.
Essentially.
With AP 1. So if you roll a 6 to wound with one of these things, you're AP 3.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Which is pretty dope.
Which is nice. So they're good at punching through armor. And they're just kind of cool. Their bows look like they're like on fire.
Yeah.
And the arrows.
I don't even remember what the Avalorn. I don't even remember what the model looks like. Oh yeah. Well, it's like blue fiery.
Yeah. They look really dope.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
They also have skirmishers. They all have strike first. I didn't realize that's kind of crazy. With weapon skill and ballistic skill 5. And they have the evasive special rule, which is actually really cool, which I'm going to double check because I want to make sure I get this right, how this one works. So this is a pretty rare special rule from the core book. So once per turn, when this unit is declared as the target during the enemy shooting phase, it may choose to fall back in good order and will flee directly away from the enemy unit shooting at it. Once this unit has completed its move, the enemy unit may continue with its shooting as declared.
That's
so it's kind of like a fall, you know, declaring to flee from a charge, except it's flee from this shot. Oh, we're out of range now. Too bad.
That's really cool.
That's really neat.
Never seen that special rule until then. That's really
I can't think of another unit that has it yet off the top of my head.
I'm sure something in the Wood Elf army will have it. Just sounds very Wood Elf.
Yes, right? This is a... Sorry.
No, you're okay. Before we get into our monsters, actually, let's do the monsters first because they're fun. And then we can go back to horse people. So, griffins.
Awesome.
I hate griffins because of Dan Cole. So Dan Cole has this absolutely gorgeous model, this griffin. He always uses it as his BSB, and it flies around the table, and it's like, hey, I've got a 12-inch bubble of reroll everything because I hate you, Taylor, and you're the worst human being that's ever lived.
Just reroll leadership test because he was the BSB. Don't make it out like it's worse
than I like huge bubbles of rerolls.
And
kind of does that now.
Okay.
Just BSBs aren't as good as they used to be. That's not a build I would take probably very often anymore.
It's still a good build.
I think it's still a solid build. Griffin is still a good monster.
Yeah. So, I mean, you still get the +2 toughness from the Sun Dragon for 50 points less. You only get +3 wounds instead of +4. But you still weapon skill 5, strength 5, initiative 5. So it's an extra initiative 4 attacks. Mm. This thing's got wicked claws, which are the same as the dragon's. The only thing it really doesn't have is a breath weapon. And it's fly 9 and instead of fly 10. And the stomp attacks are only D3.
Yeah,
it still causes Daryl. It's terror. I don't know who Daryl is.
It causes terror.
It still causes terror, which is amazing. It has heavy armor instead of full plate. And then you have to make one attack with its mouth, which is strength 5, armor bane 2. But it's multiple wounds too, so anything that goes through is, or that one wound if it goes through is 2 wounds instead. This thing is still
dope. Good.
It's good. Really
is it hard to bring down too?
It's still toughness 5 with 5 or 6 wounds.
Okay. I mean, I always thought that Wicked Claws never died, but like that kind of like proves the point there.
You know, there ain't no laws when you're attacking with the Wicked Claws is what I've actually heard.
Yeah.
Plus, you're going to have a character on it, so there's a good chance it's going to have real good armor and a ward save.
Yes, you can put a prince or noble on the griffin.
You can put a prince on this?
You can't put a mage on a griffin, though. Yeah, prince or noble can go on the griffin, so pretty sweet there.
Is that a viable thing, though, to spend the points of a prince and not put it on something much bigger, or is that...
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, because it's still, like, it's 130 points, so it's cheaper than any of the dragons by a margin. Right. And
180 is the Sun Dragon.
Yeah. The cheapest is 180. So it's 50 points cheaper.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
50 points is a big amount. And I don't think it's that much worse.
Yeah.
Right.
The only thing that's worse is it's -1 wound. That's it.
Yeah. Cause the -1 armor doesn't really matter. Your prince or noble is going to have better, at least a 4 aboard armor save. And you take the better of the two anyway.
Yep.
So that, who cares that it has heavy armor instead of full plate? That's fine. Yeah, its stats are a little bit worse, and doesn't have the breath weapon that I don't really care about. Griffin is still a very good choice.
So I think the biggest thing here is probably the D3 stomps instead of D6. But at the same time, for 50 points less, I got to be honest,
it's a lot
I'd rather take
items.
This thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely want to try out some more monster riders with the Griffin there. You're talking about a zoo list. You're saying before, like, can you imagine like a prince on a star dragon and a noble on a griffin?
So honestly, Dan, I hate that. So what I would do personally is I would put my prince on a griffin and put my noble on the dragon. So that way it kind of balances out like the weaknesses of the two.
Okay. I like that.
Right. So you have your noble who's just like, here's 50 points of this stupid magic weapon. Go over there and kill things.
Yeah.
And then your prince is like, hey, I'm rocking up a 2-up ward save, which is not possible. And I'm just going to, you know, I'm still going to kill things, but I'm not going to go away. And then, oh, what's that behind me? A phoenix? Weird.
Caw.
A phoenix the size of a dragon? Strange.
So just double checking, you can get a noble on a dragon. You have to give him the Blood of Kalidor elven honor. Otherwise, a noble can't ride a dragon.
Gotcha.
But you can do it. So you can have your noble on a sun dragon and then your prince on a griffin. Ugh.
Yeah.
I like that. It's kind of like using a dragon mage as the noble, but just better in combat.
Right, which I don't know if you need. Like, at that point, take the Dragon Mage and then a noble and a prince on a griffin.
Oh, then you know? Really, oh, yeah. And then you just got a big block of Sea Guard as your core, and then maybe some Dragon Princes if you have points left.
Why? Great Eagles, Phoenixes, and...
There you go, you got your Air Force.
Yeah, exactly. And then your Sky Cutters, like, who cares? Oof.
Yeah, love Griffins. That's still not all. Like, I love... Elves aren't typically known for their monsters in different iterations of fantasy, but, like, just mounts. You have six different options of monstrous mounts, because you can also take the Flame Spire or the Frostheart Phoenix.
Yeah, which is super dope. So the Flame Spire is kind of like just your normal Phoenix, but really big. Yeah. So, like, the mini, I think, is actually bigger than the dragon miniature.
I mean, the wings have got to be 7-8 inches wide.
They're friggin' huge. So this thing is super neat because when it dies, you roll a d6 before you remove the model from play. Go ahead.
It might not.
It might when not
it
die.
Dies, it might so not.
On a 1-2, it's dead. On a 3-5, the Phoenix explodes in flame. Every enemy unit base contact with it suffers d6 strength 3 hits with AP minus 1 flaming attack. Ouch. And then cool. You remove the Phoenix. On a 6, it comes back d3 wounds.
And its rider, should it have one?
It's totally fine. Just comes right back.
D3 wounds. Like, ah, man, you just did all these wounds to it, and now it's back and it's got 3 more.
It's so dope. It's also got this crazy wake of fire. Yeah. So when it's enraged, it essentially, like, the plumage explodes in a magical flame, right? So the model may perform a wake of fire against a single enemy unit that's not engaged in combat, right? So this model must move over the unit it wishes to attack during the remaining moves phase. Once the model's movement is complete, the enemy suffers d6 strength 4 hits, AP minus 1 flaming attacks. So you fly over something and just automatic d6 strength 4 hits, which is super dope.
And it's like the gyro bomber just flies over and boom, 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 does damage. It just drops fire. It's got a napalm attack.
Just giant flaming feathers.
Right? Yeah.
Still got the same wicked claws as the dragons, which is super dope. And if you take it as a mount, it gives the +2 toughness, +3 wounds. It's interesting. It only has 3 attacks at 170 points. So it's only 10 points cheaper than a sun dragon. And it's only movement 2 on the ground as opposed to movement 6. So for any reason you can't fly, this thing just, like, hops along like a robin instead of, like, actually moving. It's very interesting.
One thing Tim will like is that it has stomp attacks 2. No roll needed. Just does 2.
Yeah, I like automatic attacks. Like, looking at my own army and, like, anything that has the flyover thing, I'm just like, yeah, I like this a lot, actually. Mm. I don't want to roll to do stuff. I just want to, like, roll to see how many times I do it.
I do. Like, I feel like this one's a little overpriced compared to the Griffin. It's got worse combat stats than the Griffin. Yes, it flies 1 inch faster, which can be a big deal, actually. It only causes fear, not terror. It's got fewer stomp attacks, potentially.
The nice thing about it is you have that built-in bomb, which is cool.
That is really cool.
There's a 1 in 6 chance that this and the character on it comes back to life. So, like...
That is huge,
right? It's not going to happen often. It's never going to happen for Tim, but there's a chance.
But you're saying there's a chance, though.
There is a chance for everyone but Tim.
It does also have the Blessings of Assyrian special rule, which gives it a 5-up ward save against any wounds suffered by an attack that is flaming.
Yep, which is super dope. And it's close order, which I just noticed. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, I don't know if that really matters.
I just think plus one combat res is nice for, like, a single monster.
I don't think it gets that because it's not Behemoth, so it doesn't have the lumbering rule.
Oh, that's dumb and also stupid.
All right, because remember we figured out a couple episodes, last episode or a couple episodes ago, that it's not being close order that gives you +1.
Yeah.
It's when you're in combat formation and have more ranks than file.
Yeah, I see the monstrous creature there.
More ranks than file.
More ranks than files.
Wait.
More files than ranks?
Now I'm confused. Got to be deeper than you are wider.
Yeah.
You got to be thick. Yeah. So you got to be wide. You got to be nice and wide. Yeah. And the alternate to that is the Frostheart Phoenix, which is probably Dan's favorite. So I'm going to let him take over here.
I actually wanted to ask about this one. That sounded cool.
Yeah. So it's a different take on a Phoenix where as the Phoenix gets older, it's like fires burn out eventually. So it can be reborn and whatnot. But as it gets too old, it gets cold. So a Frostheart Phoenix is just a Flame Spire Phoenix that's lived a long time. So it's all icy, snow. They're typically blue. It's the one I painted mine as. The kit is really cool where the wings have little details in it with like the Frostheart Phoenix has these big old stylized snowflakes and things on it, whereas the Flame Spire Phoenix wings are fire.
Now, to be specific, though, just because I really like this mechanically, like flavor-wise. So like if a Phoenix gets killed, it has an opportunity potentially to be reborn as a Flame Spire Phoenix.
Right.
But if that just gets too old, not necessarily that it's been killed and regenerated a whole bunch of times, but like just it hasn't been killed. So it keeps going until it's cold effectively.
Yeah.
So then if that dies, does it come back as a Flame Fire?
No.
No.
So it doesn't have that rule.
Oh, so once you...
When it dies, it just dies.
So you hit retirement and you don't come back anymore.
Right.
Okay.
It's just... so the lore behind it on the page here says as a flame spire phoenix ages, its body cools until finally the plumage that once blazed with fire grows heavy with frost and ice. Once this occurs, the phoenix must leave the flame spires for the part of the mountain range, for the chill that surrounds it causes pain to its brightly burning kin. And they go and basically live alone until they die.
Okay.
Freeze everything around them.
Like a dog just going under the porch.
Yep.
So
so they're pretty cool.
That sounds rad. Like I don't hate that at all.
So the 35 points extra, and the reason for that is and it says it in the little flavor text over here, without the power to resurrect itself, it actually fights harder. It's like determined to end its existence, striking a final blow against the enemies of Uthwan, which is super dope. So because of that,
straight up Clint Eastwood's and like grunts harder.
Yeah. I mean, it's just better across the stat line. It has one more attack. That's one higher weapon skill, one higher strength, also has one more toughness, which is really nice.
One toughness less initiative sticks. Just to show that it's like a little bit older.
Slower. Yeah.
Like, and the leadership actually goes up too. Cause it's like, I don't care. I'm going to die soon anyways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that probably won't really come into account. What's cool about the Phoenix is you can just take them as a unit on their own, or they can be a mount. Unlike the dragons have to be a mount, which I don't totally understand why, but whatever. So another thing that makes the Frostheart Phoenix different, doesn't get the Wake of Fire, of course. It's not fire anymore, right?
Right.
Instead, it has the Blizzard Aura. So while in base contact with this model, enemy models become subject to strike last.
Yo, okay.
Yep. So it's not quite as good as it used to be. It used to be whatever unit was in contact with it. Now it's only enemy models.
The specific which is models the same. Of the entire deal.
Which is the same for this edition, because only enemy models, like only the front rank can attack unless you do like fight in extra ranks with spears or something like that.
It's the same in regard to this particular model, the Phoenix. But if you're like charging in with another unit, say you've got Swordmasters that are fighting alongside the Frostheart, the enemy that they're against might not have strike last. If they're
correct.
Yeah. A bunch of models in the unit, only the ones actually touching the Frostheart Phoenix, which for some reason they didn't change the base. It's still 50 by 100, so it's a little bit less narrow than other monsters. It is a monstrous creature instead of a behemoth.
Interesting.
So like the dragon, which arguably is smaller, is on a 60 by 100.
Right, but they have to be ridden.
True.
True. Yep.
So maybe, you know.
But Frostheart Phoenix, the Phoenix, both of them, you can take as a mount.
But you don't have to. Behemoths, to me, scream like unintelligent, right? I mean, they need to be directed. Well, the Phoenix is slightly more intelligent.
Right.
So they are just monstrous. They're not behemoths. They have a purpose.
Aw.
They're not impetuous.
Also true. I don't think the Frost Flame Spire Phoenix is.
It's not. You don't even need to look it up. I know.
Wow, I'm impressed. So again, as a mount, the Frostheart costs more. What's kind of fun is they just cost their normal, like it costs the same to take it as a mount as it does as its own unit. Right? It's 205 points added onto your character, plus 3 toughness. So now your rider is toughness 6. and then plus three wounds, which I think that was the same.
It was, yep.
That's the same. Not as many characters can ride phoenixes as can ride dragons. Like princes and nobles, mages, none of them have access to phoenix. Unless you give them the Anointed of Assyrian honor. That's the only way to be able to ride a phoenix. The past edition, there was a separate character called the Anointed of Assyrian. Was just that title, was its own character. Yeah. Now it's just, you can have a prince that is Anointed of Assyrian. They get the Phoenix Guard blade. I think they get the Phoenix Guard rule where they saw their death and they could potentially ride a phoenix. Because of the, you know, the Phoenix Guard.
Right, they guard the phoenix.
Yep, so you can choose either one of the phoenixes for them to ride, which is super cool.
One other tiny little thing here is the Frostheart actually uses that frozen stuff on its body as better armor. So it has full plate instead of heavy.
Oh, yeah.
Which is pretty neat.
Which does come into play when you have them as their own unit, and that's very important.
Correct. So, Tim, I don't know if you actually, like, heard what Dan said there was, remember those Phoenix Guard guy who, like, see their own death and are, like, take an oath of silence and they're, like, terrifying?
Yes, because, yes. So
they are riding giant phoenixes into battle now. That's horrifying.
And that's rad as hell, actually.
Yeah, so any of your high elf characters, prince, noble, archmage, mage, whatever, can take the Anointed of Assyrian. I think even I gotta double check if the handmaiden can take an honor, because she already is the handmaiden. She kind of has an honor.
Yeah, right.
Anointed of Assyrian honor, 15 points. You can only take one honor. It says may be mounted on a phoenix, but cannot choose any other mounts. So it's either on a phoenix or nothing on foot, right? May be equipped with the ceremonial halberd for no additional points. If so, they may not take any additional non-magical weapons. So this, it's just a halberd for them. It's not really different, because what made the ceremony, I think it has better AP, but what made it really different was they had to fight in extra ranks like spears on a character that doesn't really matter that much. Yeah. They're going to be in the front rank. They have to be. They also gain Blessings of Assyrian. This is the 5-up ward against flaming attacks, fear, and witness to destiny special rules. So he causes fear and always has a 6-up ward save against any attacks, and then replaces Valor of Ages. So instead of rerolling panic tests, he gets veteran instead, which is just reroll any leadership test. Mm-hmm. And then it's the only way a character can join a unit of Phoenix Guard is if they also have this honor.
Is there a limit to how many times you can take that specific honor? I know it's like one honor per dude or whatever, but
no,
I don't think so. No.
Represents some characters may be given an of an honor chosen. Each honor gives the character does not say only
which is so thematic, because you can have your entire army from Trace.
Yeah, right? It shouldn't be limited, because well, if you want to build a Sea Guard army, so all of your characters have the Sea Guard honor, you should be able to do that. Absolutely, none of these are game breaking. They cost points, so it's not like you're getting something for nothing.
You're getting a ceremonial halberd for free.
You paid 15 points.
No, you said you can take it at no additional cost as long as they're only non-magical weapon. True.
No additional cost. You already paid the 15 for the honor.
So the weapon's free as part of the honor, Dan.
Yeah, you're saving money.
Games on Game Pass every month for free. I paid for Game Pass. Yeah, that's fine.
You paid for the games.
No, I didn't. They're not free. Not a sponsor.
You know who is a sponsor, though? Bearded Dragon Games on Online.
Hey, nice one. but yeah, so the Elven Honors are good. We'll get to more of those.
Handmaidens cannot take them, by the way.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
I don't know how they work now, but probably the best chaff in the entire game, besides saber tusks for ogres. How are great eagles? Have you used great eagles yet?
I've not. No, I don't feel like chaff is nearly as important as it used to be.
I feel like that's wrong, but go ahead.
I mean, totally fair. I think because redirecting charges is so much easier than it used to be. That having eagles to redirect charges doesn't really work how it used to. I think eagles can be awesome war machine hunters, lone character hunters. They could go after little units of skirmishers and just wreak havoc. So they're a monstrous creature. They're just a big old bird. They're a giant eagle. They're on a 50x50 base, so they're rather large. They close order, fly, one stomp attack, and swift stride. There's 60 points each, which is not bad at all.
Nope.
They have the same wicked claws and everything else, so that's just same strength as the model, minus 2 AP, which is nice. And then they have the serrated maw, same as the griffin, where one of your attacks has to be made with this attack. That's just their strength, armor being 2, multiple wounds 2. So they're really good at hunting lone characters.
Yeah, you can take them as a mount too for some people, which plus 1 toughness, plus 1 wound, and it's 60 points. They're just like the 1,000 point flying list, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you, man, take a griffin and then an eagle.
So I think they have a lot of potential. I think they went up 10 points from 8th edition. I believe they got another attack, though.
Yes, they were 2 attacks, I think.
Which basically they got the serrated maw attack in addition to their what they used to have.
Yeah.
Because you have to make one of your attacks with the serrated maw. So you got 2 wicked claws and 1 serrated maw every time. I think these guys are great. Especially as a mount, you just have your character flying around here for 60 points to like give some, like you said, like, here, go over there and attack that thing. Like if you've got like your, you know, kamikaze noble,
yep,
that's just going to fly into combat with whatever, with a, you know, 50 point magic weapon.
Kazakobel.
Yes.
I said.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
it's pretty dope.
So here's
a ton of points.
Here's my take, right?
Yeah.
You take the level 2 mage or a level 4 mage, throw it on an eagle for 60 points. And just be like, oh, I'm not in range for this. Yes, I am.
Right. Flying. Yeah. With that speed 10 is nice.
Right. But no, great eagles have always been the bane of my existence playing against elves of any type whatsoever.
Oh, for real.
They're just so obnoxious. And I just listen, Dan, when I only move
eagles, right? I mean, they're great. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah, they are great. They're pretty great. That's for sure. I mean, they went up 10 points, which is definitely needed. To be perfectly honest,
they got an extra tick, so worth it.
Definitely worth. And speaking of eagles, the last thing on the list here is Eagle Claw Bolt Throwers. Yeah, and I don't want to talk about them.
You say boat or bolt?
Bolt.
They just fly over the ocean, pick up boats, and then throw them at people. Yeah, you know, people always wanted one of those.
So, you know, a couple episodes ago with dwarves, we had to spend basically half an episode on war machines because they had so many.
Yeah,
elves got 1. The Eagle Claw Bolt Thrower is just a bolt thrower out of the core book, except that it's a repeater bolt thrower, so it can shoot 1 single bolt that does the, you know, spears through units and can take skewer multiple guys at once. Or
to clarify, this is not an eagle with a cannon on it.
No, they just call it Eagle Claw because it's a giant bolt, you know, it's a giant crossbow.
Yeah, no, I get that.
It's just shaped like an eagle.
Could have been a lot cooler.
It could be, yes. I totally agree.
Tim, calm down, elves.
Yeah, fair. They got ice phoenixes and stuff.
Ice phoenixes are super cool. So as a repeater bolt thrower, which as far as I know are only the high elves and the dark elves reaper bolt throwers.
Boo.
Might be something else out there I'm forgetting, where instead they get multiple shots.
D3 plus 3.
There we go. It used to just be 6. So I'm a little disappointed that they changed it to D3 plus 3.
Yeah, me neither.
It is still, they're 48 inches, same as a regular bolt thrower shot. Strength 4 instead of starting at strength 6. AP 1, but armor bane. And then the multiple shots D3 plus 3. So they can shoot 1 big bolt or they can shoot a bunch of smaller ones, which is, I always loved shooting at like cavalry that's often one rank.
A spread shot or something like that. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're only wound 1, but no, they're still wound 2.
No. Bolt throwers, regular bolt throwers are wound 2. Oh, I'm sorry. You mean the actual wounds characteristic for the unit.
So it's confusing because under bolt throwers, there's bolt thrower, right? And it has all the special rules and everything. And then there's repeater bolt thrower.
Oh, they are multiple wounds. What? No, that doesn't make sense. No.
My brain is breaking
a little
bit.
Are we talking about how many wounds they have or how many wounds they do?
Wounds they deal.
Okay.
That's got to be in an FAQ and I'll look that up.
Because the equipment under Eagle Claw bolt thrower is repeater bolt thrower, right?
Yeah.
So the repeater bolt thrower. Okay, so I think what it is.
Is it like more attacks for more damage and vice versa?
Well, so it's the same. It's the same exact thing as a bolt thrower, except it has it has rapid fire. Right. So it says instead of shooting normally, you can rapid fire. So the only real the only difference is you can a repeater bolt thrower has that rapid fire rule, so it can also do the rapid fire instead of a regular shot, which would be wounds too.
Yep, I agree with that. This
is a different set of special rules and strength and everything. Is a different weapon, effectively.
God, you just scared the hell out of me.
I did myself. I was like, wait a minute, each of these is two wounds? That's incredible. That would be way too good.
Yes.
I mean, this could be decent against something like a lone monster, like a giant. Mm. Just doing a maximum two wounds with a single bolt or getting fewer bolts. But then you're wounding on sixes, so it's like,
right. So you're getting at least four shots, you know, four or five or six shots, which is super dope. But I think, like you said, if you're going up against elves and you're facing down dragon princes, humchuck 4 to 6 shots at them at wounding on 3, AP minus 1. You know, like you're probably not going to get through their armor a lot, but one dragon prince dead is what, 400 points? Like
38. Really any heavy cavalry taking out even one on their way, chaos knights, boar boys, whatever it might be.
Can we just say the word boar boys more often on the show? I just really like the alliteration there.
Trying to fit it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I have some of the miniatures and I'm just going to give them to you, Tim, because the minis are incredible.
Well, they're already together. I have to assemble.
I think the last painted.
Last time I assembled things that were boars with boys on them, I lost a lot of heads and ears.
Did lose ears.
I think Dan actually painted them, to be honest.
I thought you got rid of all the orcs.
I don't know if I got rid of those boar boys. I'll have to look. But anyways, the bolt thrower does have a wounds characteristic of 2 as well. So normally, for most war machines, you have 3 people manning the war machine, or in this case, elfing the war machine. In this case, it's only 2 Sea Guard crew who are elfing this war machine. Has a wounds characteristic of 2. I mean, even goblin bolt throwers have a wound characteristic of 3, and goblin bolt throwers, not throwers.
Well, goblins are traditionally significantly stronger than elves.
Correct. Yeah. They actually same strength, which is weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Aren't they spear chuckers?
No, they are called goblin bolt throwers. They were spear chuckers back in the day. Okay. The Eagle Claw bolt throwers are 80 points, which is kind of pricey.
They're pricey, especially for only having 2 wounds. I've never understood why these things only come with 2 crew, but they always have. I've got old metal ones and new plastic ones.
Always two?
2 guys. Yeah, there's like a spotter and a guy loading it. And that's, I don't know.
One to fire then?
The guy loading it will then fire. So I feel like it's just that elven haughtiness. They only need 2, right? Because they're better. You need 3, or Bretonians need 5 people to work this machine. We only need 2. We're better than you are.
I think the main reason is they start Ballista Skill 4 instead of pretty much every other bolt thrower, which is 3. Like, I think even dwarves are Ballista Skill 3 for their bolt throwers.
Yeah, they are, because you kept missing that one game.
Shut up!
Again, they're good.
They are really good.
They're good. I like them a lot.
But
I think we actually talked about every unit.
Except for the horse people.
The orphans?
The orphans. Most horse people are orphans. So we can go over those real quick. Cav, Illyrian Reavers are your super fast cav, and they used to have one role. You take 5 of them with some short bows and you annoy the hell out of things. Yep. Right? You march them up, because they used to be able to march and shoot, right? They still can't they? Because they're
No.
Fast cav?
No. Anyway, fast cav's not as good as it used to be.
That's good, because
just gives them an extra turn.
So you used to be able to like march them up 20 inches up the board, 18. And then you would just like take 5 shots at your opponent's war machines, or like that one wizard that's standing behind a hill because they don't want to die or whatever.
Right. Or just start plinking into flanks just to be annoying and always have that threat of a charge with 5 cavalry spears.
Right. Exactly. Because, I mean, hey, strength 4 on the charge with now AP minus 1, right? With cav spears. It can be gross. And now you can give them scouts, which is stupid.
Really good. And
then you can give them skirmish as well, because I don't think they were skirmishers before.
No. They don't have access to Vanguard, which used to be a big part of their kit.
Hey, thank God. Vanguard was like, I put my Illyrian Reavers on the opposite ends of the table, Tim.
As far out to the flanks as you can.
And then they just got, before the game started, they moved 12 inches.
And then because they're fast cab, they could then basically reform whatever they want. Between those two units and Eagles, it was like less than 300 points in my army, and they just got in the way and tied up everything and made all of his first couple moves a huge pain.
Yeah, essentially
charges. It was great.
Essentially, it was Eagles drop onto my Mangler squigs and kill them. the net gain of 15 points.
Yep.
and then the Illyrian Reavers would go behind my Night Goblin units and be like, hey, why don't you let those fanatics out?
Or if you did break from combat, I had a unit back there ready to just be like, hey, you're all dead now.
Yeah, yep.
So Silver Hound, 3 inches, all you touched one of my Illyrian Reavers, your 50 Night Goblins are dead.
Every single one of them takes a dangerous terrain test. On a one, they die. By the way, Taylor, I hate you. So your Silver Helms are kind of like your normal knights. They have heavy armor. They've got lances. They only move 8 now, which is interesting.
Because they're barded. Because
they do have Ithamar barding. And I mean, initiative 5 with lances at, you know, strength 5 in the charge is no joke whatsoever.
Yeah, they got an initiative boost to 5.
Which is insane. And then they can take shields too. So
you're going to give them shields. There's no
right. reason not to. It's 1 point. I mean, it's 23 points a model. What's one extra point, right?
Yeah. So to me, they're pretty standard cavalry. They're good.
Yeah.
Ithamar barding helps with making them less susceptible to dangerous terrain. And then Valor of Ages and Elven Reflexes obviously give them a heads up, a leg up over some cavalry like Empire Knights. They're going to be hitting before all the time, that kind of stuff. And Valor of Ages makes them less likely to run away if they take damage from shooting. Yeah. They're pretty standard cavalry. You know, they charge in, they're going to hit you at strength 5 with their lances.
They the horses are going
to do more of the work anyway. Yep. Right? First charge, surprisingly, they do not have counter charge.
Yes, which is very interesting.
And very important for cavalry. So I faced this a lot with Andy's orcs. His boar boys had counter charge, which allows you to. Do you have to make a leadership test? Do you remember?
That sounds correct. My favorite, while Dan's looking this up, Tim, my favorite boar boy unit was boar boy Biggins.
Yeah.
Orc boar boy Biggins.
Yeah, BBB.
The old OBBB, right? Essentially, just gave them like extra weapon skill and strength and all that sort of stuff. So they were just bigger orcs on big boars.
Nice.
With big spears.
Boar boy big guns.
Yeah. Big boars, little boars, city boars.
Itty bitty boars. So countercharge. Awesome, awesome rule. We'll see it in the next unit of cavalry. I'm pretty certain.
Yes, they do have it.
Okay, thank you. So this is when a unit with this rule, which is almost always cavalry, is charged in their front arc by an enemy unit whose troop type is cavalry, chariot, or monster, so they only countercharge against this other really fast things. They may declare a countercharge charge reaction, as opposed to hold or flee or stand and shoot. They can do this instead. So what's really cool about this is that it does have some limitations. You can't do this if the enemy unit's too close. You don't have time to react to countercharge. So they have to be less than the movement characteristic of the charging unit. So if my Silver Helms are charging into those boar boys, if they're within 7 inches, or sorry, 8 inches, the movement of the charging unit, they're too close for the boar boys to countercharge, right? But if they are far enough away, you move the countercharging unit immediately moves up D3 plus 1 inches, and it counts as a charge. So however far they go is their initiative bonus, right? They have to go at least 3 if they do impact hits or something like that. So it can be not, if you roll 2 inches, you're only getting plus 2 initiative. You're not getting those impact hits, things like that. Doesn't make it the perfect reaction. But then let's see, if you're fleeing, you can't do this essentially. So countercharge is awesome. A lot of cavalry has this, not the Silver Helms, but the next ones, the Dragon Princes, do.
Yeah, so add 14 points onto those Silver Helms, and now you have Dragon Princes, which are haughty elves from Kalidor, who decide to just ride the best steeds with the best armor, and they have the best lances, and everything about us is great, and my hair is impeccable, and I'm, I just, oh my God, everything about me is great, right? So they're just...
Can't confirm.
Right? Like, the only thing worse than an elf is an elf noble, you know? Like, just someone thinks they're better than normal elves.
So dragon princes are, they're like younger nobles that are trying to prove themselves in the field of battle, maybe trying to get more lands or whatever. They are just better silver helms, which is why I believe they're rare choices. They might be special. Their weapon skill 5, so they get plus 1 weapon skill. What's most important, though, they don't get, that's it. They get plus 1 weapon skill, but also plus 1 attack.
Yeah, which is dope.
So they have 2 attacks each. They do get plus 1 leadership as well. Their leadership 9.
And they are in full plate with shields automatically, so they have a 3-up armor save.
Yeah. So and barded, so they have a 2-up armor save.
Yes, you're right. Yep.
So with that 14 points, you said, is a huge upgrade and absolutely worth it. The Drake Master, the champion, then has 3 attacks. They do have some downsides, though. They're still only strength 3 for heavy cavalry.
Yeah, which is brutal.
Which can be a little like they're only strength 5 on the charge, which most heavy, like most of the like souped up cavalry, like Chaos Knights and Knights of the Realm, Inner Circle Knights of the Empire. I think Questing Knights and Grail Knights are probably all strength 4. Boar Boy Big Guns are going to be strength 4. So they're going to be hitting harder on the charge. So only being strength 3 is a little bit of a drawback, but for everything else, it's worth it. They're close order, of course, counter charge. They have dragon armor. So they have that means they have a 6-up armor save. 6-up ward save against every wound suffered, which is nice. To have that a little bit of extra protection. They have drilled, which nobody understands. reflexes, of course, they have that plus 1 initiative in the first round of combat. First charge, so they're smashing through your ranks. And they do have impetuous, though.
And that's to show that they are like haughty nobles who want to show themselves, show off, right? They
definitely want to show off. They have Ithilmar weapons, so those rounds after they've broken their lances, it's not as bad. They get to reroll ones to hit. Sons of Kalidor means they can only be joined by your army's general or a character with the blood of Kalidor elven honor. Even other nobles that aren't blood of Kalidor aren't good enough to join this unit. And then, of course, Swift Stride and Valor of Ages, so they can reroll panic tests taken by too many casualties from shooting. So they have a lot going on.
So one of the big things about these guys that I noticed is... The Drake Master, who's the what is it called, Dan?
Champion?
Champion, thank you. He's only got 1 wound. He's got 3 attacks, which is super dope. It's plus 7 points. He can take magic items worth up to 50 points.
Yeah, a lot of the specialized unit has that have that on their just champions.
Any magic items. It's like you can that's insane to me. That a champion could just be like, yeah, I cost an extra 57 points. Screw you. Like,
yeah. So like some of the specialized cavalry, specialized infantry have that, like Phoenix Guard, the champion only takes 25 points.
Ugh. Yeah, but still 50. That's insane. I'm sure I'm misremembering something with dwarves. I'm sure hammerers could probably do the same, but why would I not want them to use their awesome hammer?
Yeah, for real.
You know,
it's nice. So like if you want to try to protect him a bit more with his 3 attacks, maybe give him a Seed of Rebirth, because that's a super common magic item that gives him a 5-up regen.
Yeah.
There's a couple different options you can take there. Give him the Bedazzling Helm or Beguiling Helm, whatever it's called, so enemies are -1 to hit him.
Yeah, so I'm just checking real quick. The Royal Champ for Hammerers can take weapon runes up to 25 and talismanic runes up to 25.
Oh, there so you
it
go.
Actually just, specifies. Just talismanic. Right.
But yeah, dragon princes are awesome. They're 37 points a model, so they're certainly not cheap, but I think they are absolutely worth it every time.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, every time you put them on the table, I'm like, well, those need to die first.
Yeah, so like if nothing else, they take a lot of aggro,
right? And then everything else in your army just dances around me.
And then they can be hard to kill if it's not like a bolt thrower that doesn't allow armor or something like that. They still have a 2+ armor save and a 6+ ward.
Yeah.
So they have a little bit of staying power. So I want to run through the elven honors real quick. I don't want to spend too long on this because we're already going a bit long here. But basically, what used to be characters in older editions are now an honor that you can just apply to any character except for the handmaiden, like the lore master. You want your prince to also do magic? You could do that. You can make him a level one wizard. And you can give him the Sword of Hoeth for no additional point cost. You can be a Shadow Stalker and be like a super extra awesome Shadow Warrior and get things like Ambushers and Evasive, Flee and Fire, and Scout, which is really cool. Blood of Kalidor, we talked about. Warden Saffery is basically just you are a character Swordmaster with Sword of Hoeth and Deflect Shots, Killing Blow. They get a little upgraded compared to the Swordmasters that only get Cleaving Blow. If you want to be a White Lion character, you get the Tracian Hunter honor, which allows you to ride a White Lion Chariot and get their special Great Weapon and Stubborn. And then there are two free ones. Pure of Heart is a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yep.
To always give if you don't want to spend the points on an honor, because it doesn't cost any and allows you to... all friendly units within their command range can use their leadership characteristic instead of their own, as long as this character is not fleeing. And any this character in any unit it is joined automatically passes any panic test it is required to make. Which is like, for free? Okay, I'll take some extra bonuses.
Seriously.
And then the Sea Guard we talked about last time.
Yeah, so probably don't have enough time to go through all the different magic stuff. We've touched on a lot of the special rules, but as much as I absolutely detest elves in general, this army is beautiful to behold on the table, to be honest. Oh,
they're so cool.
They're just so pretty. And they do have so many different things going on for them as far as like you can really tailor this list. No, I'm Taylor. For anything you want. You want to do a whole bunch of cav, you can do that. You want to do just like a column marching formation, you can do that. You want to bring the just trace. Everybody's just from trace, you can do that. Like it's really cool how you can tailor each individual list to what exactly you feel like fielding for your elves. I really love the lore behind this. Specifically, but I think that's all we got time for today. You guys have anything you want to jump in? Anything you want to add? Any elves you want to make fun of before we're done?
I just want to say that when the elves get their arcane journal, mm-hmm. and get some special characters and whatnot, I'd really like to see the return of Prince Elric.
Elric?
Yeah. So, Prince Imric.
Imric,
because he was a character on a dragon, which was really cool.
That's pretty dope.
Illyrian.
Mm-hmm.
No, Eltharion would be a nice one to have back because he was a character on a griffin with a cool old model. Would love to see that version of him with a newly done model. I think would be really cool. I don't really expect that. I think we've basically seen the new units being just characters on foot.
Yeah.
And then a couple potential new things here and there, like the new Scarab Swarms. We haven't seen a ton in the way of actual units, just a few characters here and there for the most part. But I bet we get like the old Prince Imric model back. Like we got other old stuff.
I mean, we had the dwarf update here relatively recently, and all those old runesmiths and engineers and all that coming back is super dope. I can't wait to buy way too many engineers.
Right?
Probably never
good now, though.
Yeah, they're real freaking good. But no, thanks everybody for being here. Thanks for listening, everybody. I really appreciate all of you so very, very much. Make sure to go over to professionalcasual.com where we do all of our stuff. You can find our socials there, podcasts that we do, our blogs, our merch. Literally everything is on that website. We do giveaways every now and then. You can check there for those as well. Twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork. We've got the Hobby Hangouts Monday, 8 p.m. or 6 p.m. Eastern, 6 to 8 Eastern. We've got, the Power Phase on Tuesday, which is our 8 p.m. show. And Tim streams pretty much every single day at 3 p.m. When available. And then we also sometimes do some things on the weekends, like, what is it, Soulbound you guys have been doing on the weekend, which is super dope. And then we also have been doing Ben's Games 2 p.m. Saturday, where he usually plays some sort of Souls game. Usually is what he's been up to. We also have a Frontline Gaming affiliate link down in the description below if you want to go ahead and check that out. And we've talked about before. Oh, actually, what's the next one coming up? It's Salt City GT?
ACO's first, right?
ACO,
yep, and Iron Weld will be first. But yeah, ACO will be the next FLG one.
All right, so yeah, go ahead and get your tickets for the Atlantic City Open, which is up right now. The tickets are live for
and
any
Old World's
of your...
there, too.
And Old World is there.
Yeah, they're having an event for that. That's amazing.
Super dope. We'll be covering the MCP stuff, but we'll pop our head into any of the Old World things probably as much as we can.
It's ACO, right? It's all in one big room. Like, we'll be next to it relatively.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really wish I had realized there was an Old World event at Adepticon and totally missed it.
Like, what there was?
There was.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally
missed it. Yeah, I didn't realize.
Too. Huh. Well, we were unbelievably busy, so.
Yeah, right.
Get prepared for next year's Adepticon by reading our blogs by Woo! Our own Dr. D.
Dr. D.
Dr. D.
Dr. D.
Let's see. BeardedDragonGames.online. We touched on a little bit. Have our local game store be your local game score. And Monument Hobbies. You can use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout and get yourself a little bit extra off. Helps us out directly to get the absolute best paints you've ever used in your entire life. MonumentHobbies.com.
Wow.
I think that's all I got, folks.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here. Don't make your cloaks out of beards. And we'll see you in the next one.
Thanks for talking about elves with me.
Love y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the other great shows here at the Professional Casual Network. Like what, Danny?
I'll tell you. On Mondays, we've got the Lost Omens podcast, our Pathfinder 2e actual play, hosted by me, playing through the Extinction Curse AP. Also, streaming on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork at 7 p.m. Eastern time, you can check out, oh yeah, The Power Phase, our Marvel Crisis Protocol live battle report show. On Tuesdays, the podcast version of Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog is available. On Wednesdays, alternating releases on the Patreon, we have Settling the Southlands, our homebrew Wolforp actual play, and The Slithering, a Pathfinder 2nd edition actual play. And on Thursdays, live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, we've got Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog.
You can also check out back episodes of Elite Eight Showdown and the first 39 episodes of the Lost Omens podcast, the first 24 episodes of Settling the Southlands, and the first handful of episodes of The Slithering on the YouTube at youtube.com/theprofessionalcasual.